had tried to kill Vetinari for years, because the world with him in it was just preferable to the one without him. Besides, Vetinari had tamed Ankh-Morpork. He tamed it like a dog. He'd taken a minor scavenger among scavengers and lengthened its teeth and strengthened its jaws and built up its muscles and studded its collar and fed it lean steak, and then he'd aimed it at the throat of the world. He'd taken all the gangs and squabbling groups and made them see that a small slice of the cake on a regular basis was better by far than a bigger slice with a dagger in it. He'd made them see that it was better to take a small slice but enlarge the cake. Ankh-Morpork, alone of all the cities of the plains, had opened its gates to dwarfs and trolls. Alloys are stronger, Vetinari had said. It had worked. They made things. Often they made trouble, but mostly they made wealth. As a result, although Ankh-Morpork still had many enemies, those enemies had to finance their armies with borrowed money. Most of it was borrowed from Ankh-Morpork, at punitive interest. There hadn't been any really big wars for years. Ankh-Morpork had made them unprofitable. Thousands of years ago, the old empire had enforced the Pax Morporcia, which had said to the world, "Do not fight, or we will kill you." The Pax had arisen again, but this time it said, "If you fight, we'll call in your mortgages. And incidentally, that's my pike you're pointing at me. I paid for that shield you're holding, and take my helmet off when you speak to me, you horrible little debtor." And now the whole machine, which whirred away so quietly that people had forgotten it was a machine at all, and thought that it was just the way the world worked, had given a lurch. The guild leaders examined their thoughts and decided that what they did not want was power. What they wanted was that tomorrow should be pretty much like today. "There's the dwarfs," said Mr. Boggis. "Even if one of us, not that I'm saying it would be one of us, of course, even if someone took over, what about the dwarfs? We get someone like Snapcase again, there's going to be chopped kneecaps in the streets." "You're not suggesting we have some sort of vote, are you? Some sort of popularity contest?" "Ah, no, it's just all more complicated now, and power goes to people's heads."
"And then other people's heads fall off."
"I wish you wouldn't keep on saying that, whoever you are," said Mrs. Palm. "Anyone would think you'd had your head cut off." "Huh? Oh, it's you, Mr. Slant. I do apologise."
"Speaking as the president of the Guild of Lawyers," said Mr. Slant, the most respected zombie in Ankh-Morpork, "I must recommend stability in this matter. I wonder if I may offer some advice."
"How much will it cost us?" said Mr. Sock.
"Stability," said Mr. Slant, "equals monarchy."
"Oh, now, don't tell us."
"Look at Clatch," said Mr. Slant doggedly. "Generations of serifs. Result, political stability. Take Pseudopolis, or Stolat, or even the Agatian Empire."
"Come on," said Dr. Downey. "Everyone knows that kings..."
"Oh, monarchs come and go, they depose one another and so forth," said Mr. Slant. "But the institution goes on. Besides, I think you'll find that it is possible to work out an accommodation."
He realised that he had the floor. His fingers absent-mindedly touched the seam where his head had been sewn back on. All those years ago, Mr. Slant had refused to die until he had been paid for the disbursements in the matter of conducting his own defence.
"How do you mean?" said Mr. Potts.
"I accept that the question of resurrecting the Ankh-Morpork succession has been raised several times recently," said Mr. Slant.
"Yes, by madmen," said Mr. Boggis. "It's part of the symptoms. Put underpants on head, talk to trees, drool, decide that Ankh-Morpork needs a king."
"Exactly. Supposing sane men were to give it consideration."
"Go on," said Dr. Downey.
"There have been precedents," said Mr. Slant. "Monarchies who have found themselves bereft of a convenient monarch have obtained one, some suitably born member of some other royal line. After all, what is required is someone who, knows the ropes, as I believe the saying goes."
"Sorry, are you saying we send out for a king?" said Mr. Boggis. "We put up some kind of advertisement, throne vacant, applicant must supply own crown?"
"In fact," said Mr. Slant, ignoring this, "I recall that during the First Empire, Genua wrote to Ankh-Morpork and asked to be sent one of our generals to be their king, their own royal lines having died out through interbreeding so intensively that the last king kept trying to breed with himself. The history books say that we sent our loyal general Tacticus, whose first act after obtaining the crown was to declare war on Ankh-Morpork. Kings are interchangeable."
"You mentioned something about reaching an accommodation," said Mr. Boggis. "You mean, we tell a king what to do?" "I like the sound of that," said Mrs. Palm.
"I like the echoes," said Dr. Downey.
"Not tell," said Mr. Slant. "We agree. Obviously, as king, he would concentrate on those things traditionally as so-